You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis, from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, where you can catch all of the post-game interviews in the locker room, at the podium. You can check out all that good stuff, as well as some cool film study stuff that we do. Today, I'm joined by one of my favorite follows on all of Twitter, a great basketball mind, former video coordinator with the Nets, former assistant coach with the Nets, video guy with the Grizzlies. It's Steve Jones Jr. What's going on, Steve?
I'm good. How you doing? Put some respect on my credentials, sir.
I tried to. And if you're not following the guy, he really is a great follow, man. Just knows basketball very clearly and then does a great job of, I think, splicing together clips that are interesting. I'm scrolling the timeline right now. You got some clips from last night's game. So everybody checked it out. The handle will be in the description of this show. So first of all, there's a lot of playoff games going on in the first round. Have you caught every single one of them, or do you have to pick and choose which ones you're watching?
I try and watch as many as I can. I got kids, so I gotta try and I gotta pick and choose some of them. So Pacers Celtics, I had to go watch a soccer game, and Pistons Bucks, unfortunately, they're out. They're out right now.
Yeah.
That is laundry time. That is kid time. they got to show me some. With Blake out, I can rewatch that one. So
what age soccer players do you have?
I have all three are in soccer now. So I got 10, 7, and 5 now. So
I had 3-year-old soccer last year, and that was a real experience.
Oh, that's different. Oh, yeah. It's very interesting at that young age. It's something. So anyone who has kids out there, you know what I'm talking about. But it's an experience. I'll put it that way.
It's definitely an experience. My daughter, I don't know if she was quite ready for it. She did not touch the ball the entire season. But it was – I got her to the point where she would at least chase the ball, which felt like a real win. So, yes, 3-year-old soccer is pretty hilarious.
It's good coaching. It's just watching a bunch of people either stand around or everyone get in a bunch and pile up and try and kick each other.
Yep, exactly. All right, so this game last night with the Nuggets, I think this Nugget series, it was on the brink of – I was going to say it was interesting, but it's only interesting because of the comeback. It was on the brink of – maybe going in your Milwaukee Bucks pile. There was a point certainly in the third quarter where I thought, okay, this series might be a sweep. Did you get that sense watching the game that this was headed in a pretty ugly direction?
Oh, absolutely. The Spurs had been responding to every run that Denver had put up, and it felt like the season was on the line. You could kind of feel a little bit of the tension and just watching it. And then the Nuggets responded with that urgency. But absolutely. The Spurs had him on the ropes. They didn't land the knockout blow, but they had him on the ropes.
You mentioned the Spurs not letting him over the hump. That was the story in game one, too. Denver kept making runs and could never get over the hump. And I think that's a trait of a good team. I mean, they can temper sort of these little 4-point runs, 6-point runs, but they never let Denver fully get going.
No, yeah. I think the big difference is in game one, the Nuggets weren't able to get out in transition. That was a mixture of the defense not being exactly where they wanted it to be. In this game, really when they started getting going in that second half, they were getting stops and they were getting buckets on the other end. They were getting in transition. So that activity on defense paid off. And now all of a sudden they're getting those easy baskets. Spurs aren't able to load up. And one of the things I've noticed is the Spurs have zero room for error in transition. You know, I think they can't afford to let Denver get out and get into a flow. And I think that's one of the sneaky things about this Nuggets team is they are a good offensive team, but they need those defensive stops to be able to push it, to push the tempo, to get a team on their heels. So now everything kind of flows instead of just being in the half court and being static and having to kind of produce that same movement that you can get from a natural flow.
How does Denver create fast? I mean, you talked about getting the stops. But is there something about – it's weird that they had zero fast break points in game one. Is there something they can do to sort of generate those fast break looks, or is there something that they did in game two to create those?
I mean, outside of defense, to not be Mr. Captain Obvious, I think just being able to push the tempo, get into their actions a little bit quicker,
Yeah.
You know, there's some times where San Antonio score and they'll just kind of walk it up a little bit, start with 16 on the clock, get up there, get an 18, get some movement, make the Spurs move around. I think that's something they can explore, especially when they're on the road, to kind of maybe not play right in the Spurs' hands. Because it's one thing to want to execute a half-court set. You know, you want to get a good bucket. You want to make sure you're executing. But you're also playing into their hands of being able to see what's coming and kind of communicate and try and load up against you.
Is there anything you've seen that from Denver that's kind of surprised you in a positive way in this playoffs? Anything that they've been able to accomplish? I mean, this game, the defensive rating, not that great, but I think in the first game, Denver did a pretty solid job defensively. But is there anything that's kind of surprised you with them?
I think the way that they've been able to bother LaMarcus Aldridge, I expected him to have a little bit, not easier, but a little bit more of a ability to kind of put his will on the game.
Yeah.
And they've kind of been able to force him out on the perimeter, bother him on his post-ups, and render him ineffective. The more they can get Aldridge and DeRozan's field goal attempts to match their point totals, the better off it's going to be for Denver. And I think it's been fun to see how they've guarded Aldridge. DeMar DeRozan's still going to cause a problem. I'm a little surprised the Spurs haven't explored to posting him up a lot more. But I think just the way that they've been able to kind of commit to, okay, I guess you could see they're figuring it out. Okay, we're going to cut off the paint. And, yeah, your second unit looks Spurs-like, but we're going to test how Spurs-like they are. You know, I mean, for this series, the Spurs have only made, what, about 12, 13 threes total.
Right.
So starting to figure out, okay, if we cut off the paint a little bit, we can help a little bit more here. We can kind of get in rotation and dare you guys to make some shots. Now, obviously, it's going to be a little different when San Antonio goes home, but they're starting to figure out, okay, where are our spots to get ourselves – in a position where we could stop what they want to do.
What about, let me ask you, before we go to a break, we'll start by talking about Jamal Murray, because he was the story of game one. Do you think, is he more the guy from quarters one through three, or more the guy from quarters four, or is he just that guy that's going to be so up and down?
He's going to be up and down. I mean, the fourth quarter guy is in there. So it's good to know that for Stanton to remember, he's still there. But that's going to be the trick and the balance of the series. San Antonio is going to dare him to be that guy for four quarters, if that makes sense. They're going to make him be that guy for four quarters to make them pay. And he's got to find that consistency to be able to not just go off in the fourth quarter, because he was amazing last night, but find the consistency to make San Antonio pay throughout the game so it balances out their team.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about that matchup with Jamal Murray and Derek White some more, because to me that seems like the key of the series, and it kind of that was proven evident, I think, last night. And when Jamal Murray won that battle, Denver stormed back. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. Listeners, let me tell you about Wyze.com, the brand new camera that for just $20 delivers you crystal clear 1080p HD videos directly to your phone. It comes in a 1-inch by 1-inch by 1-inch cube that you can set up anywhere. It's got a magnetic strip on it. You can attach it to something metal. There's some ways to mount it in your house. And you can put these all over your house, in the kids' bedroom, garage, outside, around the patio. That you can carry them on the go. It's really an incredible product, and it's insane that it's only $20. You can buy a dozen of these and set them up all around your house. You'll have better security than Fort Knox. What you're going to want to do is go to Wyze.com, WYZE.com/locked, and that's where you'll find all the best deals on all of their products, not just the cameras, but some of the accessories as well. And you also get set up with 14 days of rolling cloud storage, so you can rewind your videos up to 14 days worth and check out. So if you go out of town, something comes missing, you can rewind and see exactly what happened. Check in on your dogs while you're away, check in on the kids, whatever you want to do. Really incredible product, and they got a great deal going for Locked On Nuggets listeners. WYZE.com/locked. I'm back here with Steve Jones Jr. At Steve Jones 20 on Twitter. Phenomenal follow, great basketball mind. So Derek White, I've watched a little bit of him. I know he's kind of a basketball Twitter darling, obviously from University of Colorado. He's very well liked here statewide. I didn't realize how great he was defensively, and just what a I really, really love his game. He's dominated that matchup, I think, 7 out of the 8 quarters in this series.
Oh, yeah, I agree. He just really battles. He's good at being in the right spot. He's good at pressuring on the ball. He knows how to navigate screens, not die in pick and roll. And I think his ability to pressure and know where he's supposed to be is kind of put a bother on Jamal Murray as far as being a pest. We think about Patrick Beverley as a pest, and we think about other defenders as a pest. He's doing a good job of not just bothering him, but also doing the right things as far as San Antonio's scheme.
So Jamal Murray, not a field goal in the first three quarters of this game. Do you think that had more to do with the Spurs and Derek White's defense on him, or more to do with Jamal's sort of inability to get around his defender?
I think it was a combination of both. I think he wasn't able to get the kind of looks that he wanted. I thought, they were able to put him in positions where he wasn't necessarily getting the shot that he wanted. But I thought the thing that he did that was impressive beyond the points was he was just more patient.
Yeah.
You know, he was aggressive, but also reading the defense and not forcing the issue. And that's one of the things where, as a young player this time of year, you want to be great. You want to help your team. You may overdo it or take the wrong shots at the wrong times. I thought, especially in that third and fourth quarter, he did a really good job of saying, okay, I know you guys are going to do this. I'm going to wait. I'm going to come off the screen. You guys aren't up. I'm going to take the shot. Oh, I'm going to tap the paint. He kind of mixed and matched to where, okay, I know Derek White's going to trail me on the pick and roll. Let me give him a step back. Let me pull up. Let me get to a floater. So as far as that, it kind of took away the predictive nature for the Spurs defensively.
I think Jamal Murray is a guy that can only score when he's only thinking about scoring. And I know that's weird to say, but he's still young. He's still learning the flows of the game, but I don't know that he's great at trying to run the offense and score. And in the fourth quarter, you know, he started shooting in a big basket, and he just locked in on the basket. And that's when he seems to be at his best. Is that a trait you kind of see from him? And what does a growth curve look like for a player that's maybe more of a scorer than a true point guard?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why him and Jokic work out so well together, because he can do so much of the playmaking, so much of the initiating, so much of the ball movement, to where sometimes Murray will just bring the ball up the court and they'll get going, or Jokic will bring up the ball up the court and they'll get going. I think the maturation is starting to understand where his shots are going to come from,
yeah,
and when to kind of go after it. Because, the biggest thing, when you rewatch that fourth quarter, Jamal Murray took over. But it was Jamal Murray taking over, you know, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it wasn't like the offense ran through him. No, he was going out and getting shots.
Right.
You know, he did a great job, but he was going out and getting shots. So to your point, it's starting to figure out that balance of, you know, the great players always know they can get theirs. You know, so they are able to give it up, get it back, and still go and attack, as opposed to, hey, I'm going to score. I'm going to go score. It's just finding that balance for him. That comes with age and more years.
I think Jamal reminds me a lot of Kyrie Irving. I mean, he's not nearly as quick. He doesn't have as good of a hand. He's lesser player at every skill. But he kind of is that same type, and I think Kyrie is this way. The more he's just focused on getting buckets, the better off he seems to be. Do you see a similarity there at all?
You're going to get roasted on Twitter for that.
Hey, I said he's the you can say the B version or the C version or something.
Nope, I'm gonna cut that up. Put a headline. You're gonna get arrested. No, I see similarities as far as the scoring ability. I also see similarities in that Kyrie, I think, is an underrated cutter. Jamal Murray is an underrated cutter as far as he's able to move off the ball and do different things. It's just, how do you unlock all of it at once?
Yeah,
it's hard to ignore what he can do with the ball in his hands and force him to move off the ball, you know what I mean? So it's kind of just a growth curve. I think he's got the ability to score a lot, and now he's just got to put it together and you know, read the defense. And, you know, if he misses one or two of those shots, is it a different game, you know?
Yeah.
I hate to play the result, but he went for it. He nailed it.
He doesn't miss when he gets hot like that. It really is weird because I don't – if you cut out like the hot streaks he has every 4 or 5 games, I wonder what his percentage would be. Probably pretty terrible. But there's just those streaks he goes on that he makes 5, 6 tough, impossible shots in a row. You talk about him being a great cutter. He's a great screener too. I think good scorers have a lot of these other skills, because they're things that you learn that, oh, you know, you set a good screen, I'm going to get open. Or you cut here, you're going to get an extra bucket. So I think he has a lot of those skills in him. Is there something, if there's one thing he needs to do going forward to not have quarters like 1 through 3, what would you say it is?
Just continue to be patient and not be afraid to move off the ball. You know, if I don't have it, kick it. Yeah. You know, and not go just for the step back or the tough shot or the contested shot. It's beautiful when they go in, but when they go out, everyone on Twitter wants to sit you for the rest of the series.
Yeah.
So it's just trying to find that balance. I thought he found it in the fourth, but understanding, okay, I can get my shot from here, here, and here. Let me read the defense, see what's going on, move off it, maybe get it back.
Have you, anything about his defense stood out to you?
I thought he had good activity. I thought he did a good job helping off of drives, especially in that second half. You know, he was navigating handoffs, you know, helping off of shooters. I know there's a couple curls. I think Forbes came off. He was guarding White, and he came off to contest. I thought he was engaged. But I thought the team as a whole really ramped the activity up as far as we're going to get in, we're going to be physical, we're going to fight through cuts, and we're gonna win this game.
Yeah. This is more of a storyline from game one, but I think it's pertinent in game two. You know, the Spurs are sending the double on Jokic quite a bit. They're trying to take away a lot of his low post scoring opportunities, force him to be a passer. Do you think that he has been too passive in the series, or do you feel like he has been making the right reads more often than not?
More often than not, he's made the right reads. There are a few times over the last couple of games where he's had a shot that I've seen him take, and I'm like, I'm not sure why he didn't pull it there.
Yeah.
You can kind of see the mindset. Maybe he's trying to get a drive on Poeltl. Maybe he's trying to swing it to someone else. But he's passed up on a couple of those. As far as making the right reads, I think he's done a really good job of just reading what San Antonio is doing. Mm. And I put a couple clips up today, but he's in the post up. He's waiting on that double.
Yep.
You know, he's baiting them, and he's hoping they come from the ball side so that he could see it, and he's delivering it. You know, he's a great passer, so Spurs are going to have to really figure out where they're going to double him from. But he's really waiting for that defense to come. And then he's doing a great job of coming off of screens. You know, there are a couple times where Denver ran cross screens or wedge actions for him, and he just read LaMarcus Aldridge and either popped for a shot or he came off and went the opposite way and got a little mid-range jumper. So it's just doing the little things. You know, it's Jokic, he doesn't get enough credit for his finishing ability. And it always feels like if you go through the season, he had a lot of those shots where people are like, man, how do you make that?
Right.
That's kind of what he does. So I think he's getting an unfair rap this series. I think he's been really good, especially on the defensive end. He's doing what he's asked to do, and that's all you can do.
I think I've told people this. I think defensively, Jokic is really, really good at most things. I mean, spread pick and roll, he's terrible, and that's what I think a lot of people notice. Obviously, Spurs not running a ton of that, but like guarding Aldridge in the post, I love the way Jokic guards the post. I just think he's really good at, you mentioned it earlier, but kind of taking away the spots on the court Aldridge is trying to get to. He's a much bigger bodied guy. I think Aldridge can't really move him off the spots. I like the way he defends. Are you with me on that?
Yeah. I think the one thing the Nuggets have done all year is they just took what Jokic can do well and told him, hey, you're going to do this. Everyone else figure out we're going to help around it. And they haven't asked him to do anything he can't do, you know?
Yeah.
And he's had his moments in pick and roll where it's been like, I'm not sure. But you know where he's going to be. You know what everyone's supposed to do. And that leads to a consistency that can help you out.
You mentioned him being, drawing, luring the double team. I think he's a guy, he likes to take what the defense gives, as you mentioned. And that's a really good quality. But I think guys that are like that take what the defense give, they can sometimes become too reactionary and too, you know, they're allowing the defense to sort of dictate the terms. Sometimes you have to take over. Do you think he needs to force the action at all more? Maybe put more pressure on the defense rather than kind of waiting for that double team to come?
I can understand where you're coming from on that one. I think that he definitely could. I think the difference with him is he's involved with so much action.
Yeah.
That it's easier for him to not force it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
He knows he's going to either get the ball, he's going to get screened for, he's going to set a screen, he's going to do a dribble handoff. He's going to have opportunities to, you know, make the right play.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit different in the sense that he's not coming down, getting the ball in the post, and then passing it out and never getting it back. You know, he's a focal part of the offense, so it's a little different judging him in that sense. But, yeah, there's plenty of times where I think he could put more pressure on them, especially it's going to be important for him to establish himself early on the road, I think, in game three, knowing that they're going to pay attention to him. I think that'll be interesting to see how he comes at the first 6 minutes, because I'm not sure you really want to tiptoe around in San Antonio in that environment and kind of wait for it to come.
I'm so curious to see how Denver responds to the San Antonio environment. I'm really curious to see. You have to kind of suspect not well, given how games one and two have gone for the most part, but that'll be a real test. What about Gary Harris? What have you noticed from him in the series, and how would you grade his effort so far?
He's just being Gary Harris. That's the biggest compliment I can give him.
Yeah.
he's just being consistent on both ends. I think he's been a big part of them being in both games. It's good to see him being consistent and out there and not just active on defense. He's hitting shots. He's cutting. He's able to come off handoffs and make plays. It's the Gary Harris that most people thought they were going to see for the majority of the season when he was healthy, if that makes sense.
It did. No, 100%. And I think Nuggets fans – this has been a storyline that I didn't think has really reached outside Denver, but he has not been that guy for most of the year because of the injuries and just coming in and out of the lineup. But over the last, I think the final three games of the regular season, I kind of had given up hope on him kind of returning to form. I just thought, okay, this was a year that got disrupted by injuries and he never really found his rhythm. But he has. I mean, he looks exactly like peak Gary Harris, I think, in this series. 23 points, 10 of 16 shooting, just good shot selection, great defense, I think, on DeMar DeRozan. He's a huge part. I think he's the second best player on the Nuggets roster.
Oh, wow. You might have to apologize to Paul Millsap.
Him and Paul Millsap. Paul Millsap. The funny thing is, I think those guys are – Gary Harris is the Paul Millsap of guards. I think they're both, like, very steady, consistent players, smart players. But you would go Millsap number two.
I like that analogy. Nah, I was putting respect on Millsap's name. I think they're both in the same tier. I'll be political on that one. Also, shout out to Malik Beasley. He made those shots, and Denver needed them.
He's done that a lot this year. Beasley might just be a great shooter. I mean, I think he is. He's such balance on his shot. They consistently nothing but net type shots. Are you high on him and what he brings to the table, or? He's kind of a narrowly focused guy, but like you said, big impact.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with having a specialist on your team. There's nothing wrong with having a specialist at that size. As he improves defensively, you got a 3-and-D guy right there, and you know everyone in the league loves those guys.
Yeah.
So I like what he brings to the table. I just think he gave them a different look as far as, okay, you want to help off, I'm going to make you pay for it.
Will Barton obviously struggled this season. Him and Gary Harris both, just the injuries, I think, got to him. Gary Harris has been able to bounce back over the last couple weeks. But Will Barton, I think it was a tough game to watch with him. And you saw his confidence sort of tanking as the game went on. What's kind of your read on where he's at?
The whole world dumped on Will Barton.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I was like, man.
The arena, but, too.
Oh, man. I think Will Barton is a very confident offensive player. And the worst thing that could happen to Will Barton is for him to not be a confident offensive player.
Yeah.
So he struggled last night. It wasn't great. And he hasn't had great offensive numbers this series, but he's got to keep attacking. Because if Will Barton stops attacking, then you lose what Will Barton brings to the table.
Yeah. And they might be at that point, because you talk about the confidence. I think you're right. There's some guys that need that more than others. And Will Barton is such a swagger guy, and this whole season has kind of gone off the rails for him. And I thought last night was one of the first nights I've seen him lose confidence. And a lot of that had to do, he got booed, you know, after he shot that off the side of the backboard shot, the entire arena just rained down on him. He goes to the free throw line the next time down and misses a free throw horribly. I think he was 1-for-4 from the free throw line. I think his confidence might be rattled. 1-for-10 on the game. He just couldn't get anything going with his looks. I don't know. Is this a thing? Am I overstating it, or can it be a thing with a guy where those moments are just so hard to overcome?
It can be a thing. I mean, think about J.R. Smith and how many J.R. Smith things he had to do before he finally was J.R. Smith in the playoffs.
Yep.
Or Nick Young, for example, with those type of players. You're going to have the great, and you're going to have the other side of it too. You know, Will Barton is an offensive volume guy. He's going to get his shots up. they don't go in, it doesn't look great. When they do go in, it looks awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the things is, and being booed at home in the playoffs can mess with you. You know, you saw what it did to Ben Simmons.
Right.
Yeah. But once he got over it, it's a different story.
He bounced back, yeah.
Yeah, I just think he's just got to continue to believe in himself, which, I mean, I don't think Will Barton's ever going to be truly lacking for confidence. But I think he's got an ability to bounce back. It's just finding his lanes.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a lot of times they played off of him on drives or handoffs, and he took the open shot. He didn't make it.
Yeah.
So how do you adjust to it? Do you cut? Do you drive? You know, how do you make them pay? And I think it's just continuing to believe in himself and continuing to play in that way.
Let's take our final break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the remaining Nuggets, Paul Millsap in particular, talk about some of the bench guys and then the job of Michael Malone, and then look at some adjustments for Game 3, a pivotal Game 3. We'll be right back. And I'm back here with Steve Jones Jr., and we're kind of scouting the Nuggets playoff so far, and so you mentioned Paul Millsap. What have you seen from him? He kind of Jamal Murray gets the headline because he was the king of the fourth for the Nuggets, but Millsap kept him in this when the game almost got out of hand early on, 11 points in the first quarter. What have you thought of him so far in the series?
The king of the fourth. I see what you did there.
Well,
I think he's been a really good stabilizer. Obviously, we know what he does defensively for this team as far as being in the right position and ability to switch. I think what he really does is he can cause a mismatch problem for the Spurs in the sense that, especially, you know, if they put a Gay or a DeRozan on him or someone smaller, if they switch, he can attack that matchup and it actually be a plus for the Nuggets.
Yep.
And they don't have to do it a lot. But if they can do it enough, mixing with the rebounds, mixing with the ability to shoot, now you've got someone who can contribute something else that the Spurs have to worry about. So I think it's going to be important for him to continue to stay aggressive offensively and continue to cause problems and attack the Spurs when they try and go smaller.
Bertans, I think, is the biggest mismatch for him. And he seems to enjoy going at him one-on-one. I think those are minutes that the Nuggets really need to kind of key in on. There's that second unit. He was in foul trouble, so there wasn't a ton of opportunities for this, but that second unit, when Bertans comes in and Millsap comes in to kind of help the second unit, to me, that's Millsap time. That's his time to shine, because I don't think the Spurs can guard him there. What about the bench? I think Mason Plumlee has had a tough go. I think he's been a negative in all six of the games that the Nuggets have played against the Spurs. Is this a series for him? Are there some guys sometimes in a series that it's just not their series?
I think it's a hard series for him, lineup wise. And to your point, there's absolutely series where a team can take away a guy or a team can take a guy out of a lineup.
Yeah.
I think just with the minutes he's played and the lineups he's played, the Spurs have been able to either help off of him, block him out, or attack him on the other end. You know, you've seen Rudy Gay try and go at him a few times.
Yeah.
And it's just catching a rhythm, because it's a little bit harder in this series. The Jokic and Plumlee that we saw during the regular season, we haven't seen it in the first couple games.
Right.
And that's kind of also because of how San Antonio is guarding Jokic.
Yep.
So it's a little bit harder for Plumlee to get in those same areas as far as being able to roll or snake or anything like that. So it's just finding a way to make him effective. You know, I always say that's a big word, and being able to get him involved in some dribble handoffs, some rolls, and get him back to going activity-wise. But I think defensively he's been solid. He hasn't been a liability at all. It just hasn't really been the jump that it's been during the season.
You mentioned Jokic and Plumlee, and that's been one of the the duos that Denver relies on in the regular season. I mean, they basically rotate those three bigs, Millsap, Jokic, Plumlee, between the four and the five. But in the playoffs, this is one of the things I always wonder. It's not really, I think, the culprit for why he hasn't been effective necessarily in this series. I think it has more to do, as you mentioned, that hard double team. Just there's not a lot of drop-off opportunities. But do you think Denver relying on that lineup so much in the playoffs, very few two-center lineups have worked. Do you think that's like a regular season lineup that won't be very effective in postseasons?
I think it just depends on the team and how they respect either him or Jokic, because Denver did a great job of making it work. Yeah. You know, Denver had been trying to make a two big lineup work for how many years?
It's been a while. Yeah.
Right? I mean, it goes back to Nurkic being there. Yep. And that didn't work. So I think it's one of those things where he's just got to find the little areas. Keep doing the little cuts. Keep fighting LaMarcus Aldridge in the post. And just try and find the ways to make his minutes have an impact. I think it can work. It's just going to continue to be a work in progress as far as finding how do we make him a threat while not taking away from what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does.
They're going to be okay. They're going to be okay with him posting up. Right. They're going to be okay with him rolling for the most part. It's just continuing to roll, continuing to get offensive rebounds and try and find ways to help the team.
I have a small panic attack every time Mason Plumlee posts up. And I, watching him all year, I know the like two or three moves he goes to every time. And it's always, the numbers are actually not bad. He's been pretty good on those post-ups, but they just don't look like shots that are about to go in. That,
come on, man.
That leading.
That it.
I love the guy. He hustles. He does a lot of good things. But man, that jump hook, the running sky hook, those. I always hold my breath for those ones. I know it's always hard to judge and assess coaches, but what have you seen from Malone so far in this series? How would you kind of grade what he's done in his playoff debut?
Oh, man, Adam trying to get me cussed out by somebody.
You might get a phone call. They do listen to the show, so you better be careful.
That's messed up. No, I think he's done a really good job of continuing to let the Nuggets be themselves.
Mm.
And sometimes in the playoffs, you can go ahead and over-adjust.
Yes.
Or you can over-prepare. Or you can get a little tighter. But I think what he's done is he said, hey, this is what we do. We're going to tweak it. We're going to keep getting better. And he put the trust in Jamal Murray to keep going. He keeps putting the ball in Jokic's hands. He, you know, kept Barton out there. If it didn't work, hey, I'm going to throw something else out there. He's got his starters playing heavy minutes. He's got his rotation set. And I think the little tweaks he's done as far as making sure he's got the right guys on the floor, I think it's been very good. I think the game plan as far as trying to limit DeMar and LaMarcus has been very good. But he's stuck to his guns. You know, I think in game one, they came out a little more half-court heavy than mm-hmm. I think I expected.
Yeah.
In game two, I think he was like, okay, that didn't work. So we're just going to go ahead and play with more of a flow.
Yep.
And obviously the defense helped, but no, there was more of a flow. There was more misdirection. You know, Jokic was coming off different screens. Murray was coming off and attacking. They were back to their dribble handoffs and kicking. So I think he's done a very good job of settling this group in and getting over that first win hump. Yeah. Now he's going to have to go ahead and go to San Antonio and figure out how to get that done.
Let's move to that in just a second. But I want to go to, you said something about, I can't how you phrased it, but not putting too much on the guys or whatever. And Popovich had a great quote about Derek White. That somebody asked him after game one about, you know, are you working with him on all these different details? Are you trying to get him adjusted? Pop kind of laughed and said, oh, God, no. He has enough to think about just running the point guard position. I'm not going to bog him down with strategy. Like, I'm going to keep things simple for these guys. I think that's kind of important. The more I'm around the NBA game, coaches, they have to be playing 4D chess and know all of the different moves. I think players sometimes, you know, there's a lot of scouting and stuff that goes in, but you kind of have to there's only so much I think a player can be focused on, and I think coaches have to pick which things they kind of emphasize with players.
Oh, yeah. You know, we talk about defensively pick your poison. Coaches got to pick what they're going to get their players to lock in on.
Yeah.
And if you try and get them ready for everything, you're going to get them ready for nothing.
Yeah.
And so you got to keep it simple. And, yeah, you want to talk about trends. You want to make sure we're executing the game plan. But other than that, you got to give your players freedom to adjust and take inventory of what they're seeing on the court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always a constant battle back and forth on that. And I think, you know, Denver's done a good job as far as letting their players play, making the adjustments that are necessary, but they rarely look bad when they're playing their game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does.
When they get caught up in trying to do something, it looks different.
Mm. What's the one thing Denver has, maybe the most important thing Denver has to do to win this series?
The most important thing Denver has to do to win this series is they got to make shots.
Yeah,
and that seems like the dumbest analysis ever. Because yes, the team that scores the most points wins, but they're gonna have to make the shots to make San Antonio pay for guarding them like this.
Yeah,
you know, they're not gonna win if they aren't able to do that consistently.
Denver, I mean, they shot 41%, but I don't think it from the three-point line last game, a lot of that in the fourth. But I don't think San Antonio's rushing to change their defensive scheme. I think they think, okay, that was a hot quarter. Let's keep going. At what point does San Antonio make adjustments? I mean, in game three, if they're hot in the first half, does San Antonio say, okay, we're going to double the post a little less?
I think, and that's the push and pull of the series, but I don't think the Spurs are going to necessarily panic unless the Nuggets really hit them in the head with these threes. Mm-hmm. You know, especially because of the way that Denver kind of moves the ball around, it's not like it's going to be just one guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be drives and kicks, and they're just probably going to try and protect the paint, contest any shots, and rotate. So it's kind of a little bit more difficult for them to say, you know what, let's not do that anymore. They're probably going to look at what happened and say, okay, are these four guys going to score 20 every night the rest of the series?
Right. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, Millsap, Jokic, Harris, Murray. I would say Harris, Jokic, Millsap, I feel like they could get 20 every – Murray's the guy that – I mean, he had, what, 3 points heading into the fourth quarter. So I don't know what to make of him just quite yet. What's your prediction for the series now, having seen two games?
Well, coming into it, I was concerned. I didn't think anybody was going to win a road win or get a road win.
Yeah.
Now everything's in play to me. Mm-hmm. I think it's going 6 or 7 for sure. Mm. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Nuggets in 7 just because of how the home road splits work out. Spurs would have to win both of these, in my opinion, if they want to win this series. If you go back 2-2, it's going to be tough.
3-game series, two in Denver. Yeah.
It's going to be tough to win 2 in Denver. So they're absolutely going to have to hold their home court. So you probably see either Spurs in 6 or Nuggets in 7 would be my pick.
Is Denver confident coming off of this game? I mean, if they get a blowout win, they beat the spread. If they just regular win by 10, I think you're really confident. But the fact that they were behind by so much in this game, are they confident coming out of this one?
The playoffs are very weird. It's a very strange animal in the sense that Denver was getting beat. The season was on the brink. They win in a spectacular fashion, and they feel better about it.
Yeah.
Than if they had handled their business. That's weird, right?
Really?
If you think about it logically.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if they had just won a normal pedestrian 10-point win, it wouldn't have felt like last night did.
Okay. All right.
Right? No, am I crazy?
I don't know, man. It's kind of surprising to me because I think as a fan watching this game, it was 90% just like panic and oh my God, this is really happening. They're going to get swept. And then some euphoria for the comeback, but I don't know. I'm the opposite, but I'm not wired like an NBA player. I have learned that over and over again, I think, as I've been covering this league.
Yeah. There's a hyper confidence that already exists. And for some reason, being able to come back like this means you're better than you were when you were just winning. I'm not sure. But back to your question, they should have confidence. I think this was a season-saving win, and the way they did it can make them feel like, okay, we got this. We're on the right track. We're in the right direction. Now, the biggest question for me is how are they going to handle if they get punched in the mouth in San Antonio?
Yeah. And I think they do. I mean, game three, that atmosphere, that crowd – I keep joking, who knows what wild creature is going to be in the locker room when they arrive. There's going to be some kind of crazy thing that they're going to have to overcome. And so I think they do get punched in the mouth. So it'll be interesting to see. Steve, this was great, man. You have such great insight, man. And I love picking your brain for it. So thank you very much. Is there anything you want to plug for the people listening?
You can follow me on Twitter. That's all I got, really. Thanks for listening. I don't know. You're supposed to plug me, man. Come on, man.
You're so good at this. That is my plug. You're so last time on here, just charismatic, insightful, man. We got to get you on TV. It's where you belong.
Say that.
There you go. Bring you out here to Altitude to do something. Altitude Television. Thanks so much for coming on, and thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow. I'm going to be in San Antonio for games 3 and 4. Very excited about that. So we'll be bringing you some behind the scenes stuff there, and we'll be back tomorrow recapping what is hopefully a Nuggets win in game 3. We'll see you all then.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.